Today's topic is how the human ego is showing up on planet Earth. It seems pretty obvious when we look at what's going on the planet. Some force, some power is contributing tremendously to human suffering. The behaviors of human beings are so diverse. Just think of what you've seen since the moment you've emerged from your mother till about a minute ago. And it's like these behaviors are so wide-ranging, they can literally stagger the imagination. Trying to understand the range of behaviors and the reasons for them is really for the purpose of, if we can make human behavior more predictable, if we can understand why it's occurring, what is driving this, we might be able to improve human behavior. That would be the goal, to improve human life. We can look at all existence, everything that exists, as being consciousness, with consciousness showing up as having different levels of vibrational frequencies. That's the reason we think that a desk is more solid than the air, and a rock is more solid than water. These things have different vibrational frequencies. Now, scientists have known for years that nothing is really solid, that everything is actually in motion all the time. This is reiterated in Christ Returns, reveals startling truth. He talks about this awareness that he got in the desert after being baptized by John. He saw the reality of existence. It was like, wow, nothing is really solid. Everything is, as he described, shimmering motes. Today, he says, we would think of that in terms of electromagnetic particles. So the difference between the things that we can see and the things that we can't see, really, the difference is vibrational frequencies. So you look at all the stuff with different densities, you go, okay, that really represents different vibrational frequencies. Human beings are very five-sense oriented. We can see it, we can smell it, we can touch it, hear it, taste it. We pretty much think it exists. Oftentimes people say, hey, if I can't prove through my five senses the existence of something, that means it doesn't exist. That's kind of weird, but some people actually take that as being proof of them being real, real scientists. But if we were to say the things that we perceive, water and rocks, trees and air, have different vibrational frequencies, it might make sense for us to say, you know, maybe the things we can't perceive have different vibrational frequencies. If you've ever looked at, and you can Google this, you know, the electromagnetic spectrum, you'll come across a diagram that shows the range of vibrations that are perceptible to human beings, visually or auditorily. You go, wow, this huge range, only a little teeny bit of it can be perceived by us. Those of us who have dogs recognize that dogs perceive things through their sense of smell that we cannot. They perceive things through their hearing that we cannot. And you go, well, it doesn't exist because I can't perceive it. That's beyond being silly. Even though we can't perceive this idea of consciousness, and for that reason a lot of people go, I can't even entertain the thought of consciousness. How do you deal with something that's imperceptible? Well, how about if we look at evidence of its existence? It's like, I can't perceive gravity itself. I can't see that force. I can definitely see its evidence. If I were to drop an egg or hold an egg out and expect it to float in the air, I would go, oops, I just saw evidence of gravity. I couldn't actually see gravity. I saw evidence of its effect on human affairs. You go, Oh, okay. Maybe. We could say that human beings exhibit human consciousness. You know, well, okay, maybe that's true. We could say dogs exhibit canine consciousness. Okay. How about cats exhibiting feline consciousness? All of that may be true, but it would be an adequate way to describe it. Human beings, dogs and cats, exhibit a very wide range of behaviors. So, for dogs and humans and cats, there must be different levels of consciousness that are driving those behaviors. Some dogs are obviously extremely intelligent, quick to learn, loving, on and on and on, and others are less so. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, if we were typical human beings, we would label dogs smart and dumb and let it go at that. Well, I adequately defined it. No, that's not inadequate. That's inadequate. Like, okay. So let's just assume that there are different levels of consciousness that drive behaviors, and specifically human behavior. I believe this, although I don't know of any way to prove its validity. All human activity is a manifestation of and a limitation of that person's consciousness. In other words, we cannot act outside of the field of energy of our individual consciousness. That would be like speaking a language that we don't know, or playing a musical instrument that we don't know how to play. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. If that awareness of that language or that musical instrument is not in our consciousness, we're not going to speak it, or we're not going to play it. I could say that a caveman behaves like a caveman because he has a caveman's consciousness. And when he wants to act, when he's stimulated to act by something that he perceives, he's going to access whatever is within his consciousness. That's the normal way of behaving. That's the normal way all of us behave. Now, if that caveman displays an act that appears to be, I'll say, saintly, it would be because he has accessed an aspect of consciousness that is less frequently accessed, or maybe this is more accurate, he's accessing a level of consciousness that is of a higher vibrational frequency than that of a caveman. That idea is that somehow of longing, of desire, of wanting, he has reached with his mind and his heart, his thought and his feelings, beyond his own field of consciousness, and he's accessed stuff that up to this point has not been part of his consciousness. You go, yeah. If you think about it for a minute or two, you'd go, you know what? I've heard of these kind of occurrences. They just suddenly happen. And what do we call them? Insights, flashes of inspiration, instant knowledge, miracles, moments of bliss, the light goes on, all these kind of things. And when you listen to stories of Thomas Edison or Albert Einstein or other people, they describe these kind of occurrences where somehow they reach out beyond their own level of consciousness and access something greater. That's exciting. That's exciting that we can do that. But what normally happens is not that. We normally deal with what is readily available to us. Imagine this. Imagine standing in your kitchen and you walk to your pantry. Everything that you normally use is on the shelves that are easily within reach. You know, maybe knee-high or waist-high to shoulder-high and to the right and to the left conveniently. Not much stretching or reaching is necessary on a normal basis. But if there were a special occasion and it required some item that you don't frequently use, you would have to really, really reach for it. Maybe get a stool or something to stand on, one of those little three-step ladders, and you're like, oh, and you would be reaching very high for it or very far to the right or very far to the left in your pantry seeking this item. I think that's what we all do if we need an energy pattern to handle a situation that is out of the ordinary, right? Uh-oh, our lives are in danger. We're not going to reach for the stuff we normally reach for, because if that were sufficient, we wouldn't have that life-threatening situation in the first place. So we really understand and are inspired in that situation to reach outside of ourselves, outside of our comfort zone, outside of our biofield, outside of our normal level of consciousness, outside of our normal spiritual, mental, emotional range for the support we need. Makes sense to me. Christ in Christ Returns reveals startling truth, talks about the four driving needs that the ego expresses through the personality. I think these give great insight into what is going on in the world and how the ego is showing up now. I'm going to read this. This is from letter 5. I was then shown very clearly that all the patterns experienced by humans arose from the central point of the self. Science now calls this the ego. It manifested itself in the personality as a driving need to defend the self from criticism or emotional physical attack, and a similar driving need to push aside other people in order to arrive first in the race of life. It also manifested itself in the personality as a driving need to take all that was best for the self, despite the opposition of others, and a similar driving need to hold on to personal possessions, be they relatives, friends, material goods, or achievements, despite any opposition. You go, that seems to be going on in a whole bunch of places in the world. All the volatile hot spots where there's tremendous conflict, upset, pain, suffering, war, death, and destruction. You see any of that stuff? I do. I frequently talk about the seven needs. I think it's a useful structure to look at this. I call them Sfuli, S-F-U-L-I plus two. Survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, plus the need to be right, and the need to look good, get approval. And you look and say, wow, a lot of our behaviors are driven by those seven impulses. Like, And the ego is showing up behind all that activity. I can imagine a vertical spectrum of consciousness that maybe for human beings would range from the bottom, human consciousness, upward to Christ consciousness. There's, you can go higher than that, but I'm thinking, based upon what Christ is saying in the letters, that Christ consciousness is as high as we're going to be able to elevate our own consciousness. So I'm not going to go to divine consciousness or universal consciousness, just between human consciousness and divine consciousness. That's the vertical spectrum. But I can also imagine, parallel to that, another vertical spectrum that I could label ego consciousness. You go, okay. Instead of labeling that first spectrum as the lower vibration being ego consciousness and human consciousness, I think we have to take into consideration what Christ says, that ego is absolutely essential for human existence and existence at all. So we're not going to eliminate it. So I've got this vision of a parallel vertical spectrum labeled ego consciousness. Since we're not going to and cannot eliminate the ego. Just think of it. That's not the goal. Mastering the ego is the goal, so it serves a higher purpose. So now on that ego consciousness spectrum, see if this makes sense to you. It ranges from low to high. Makes sense, right? On the bottom is low, from the top is high. Yeah, okay. But what does that mean? Maybe it means how little on the low level or how much on the high level that the ego identifies with the needs of others. How little or how much it recognizes the sentience and the sanctity of other living beings. Maybe that's the defining metric. Maybe that's the defining energy pattern that indicates low ego demonstration versus a higher ego demonstration. It seems to me that we could look at it this way. If we look at those four driving needs and even the seven, that ego seems to be showing up in this belief. The way to get is to take. The way to get is to take. We can see this in all areas of the world and all areas of life. This is not limited to the conflict in the Mideast between the Palestinians and Israelis. It is everywhere. In this country and that country, I bet there are thousands upon thousands of examples of this. But if we were to back up and look at the lives that we've experienced, we could say, children take. You ever see little kids fighting over toys? I have. You know, oh, children take, robbers take, muggers take, politicians take, the 1% takes, the 99% tries to take. They're less effective at taking than the 1%. Oh, yeah, okay. Wall Street is take. Everybody tries to take. But it's the balanced way, or more likely, if the ego is in charge, the imbalanced way of taking. That's important. The four driving needs that Christ talks about are directly related to taking. Even the first driving need, the need to defend oneself from criticism, emotional, physical attack. That's connected to taking. Think of it like this. Criticism is taking some of the energy that we have and we use to construct our identity. I feel good about me, I feel good about me, and then somebody criticizes me. It's like, oh, they just took some of my energy that I was using to feel good about me. Oh, wow. That's like somebody taking the bricks to the building that we live in. And the building we live in is our identity. It's our consciousness. It is our self-concept. It is our self-esteem. It is who we think we are. And that same idea pertains to emotional, physical attack. These attacks are perceived as taking from us. Oh, somebody's going to attack me and take my territory, property, cattle, my spouse, my children, my... It's all about taking. Our goal, contrary to what the ego tells us, is to recognize that the way to get is to give. The way to get is to give. Every farmer knows this. It's like, how do you get a harvest? You give seeds, time, attention, water, fertilizer, care to the crop, to the seeds that you planted. The way to get is to give. Everyone who understands the law of cause and effect knows this. We reap what we sow. We get what we give. Wow. No real mystery. This stuff has been known for thousands of years. Well, in theory. It's written anyway. It's not lived by because of this other advisor that is impinging on most people and human consciousness. Take, take, take. Right? That's the ego, the main advisor. You can see it, read about it in the papers, listen to people talk. Like, yikes. It's amazing. It's amazing. I was thinking of something earlier. That if human suffering produces a vibration, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't it? It produces a vibration. That's kind of like an orchestra would produce sound vibrations. Like, So, if you looked at the world as an orchestra and say, where is this vibration of suffering being produced in greatest quantities on planet Earth? Then the next question has to be, who and what are doing the conducting? And at the bottom of it, we're going to realize it is human beings being driven by ego, and this is how it's showing up. Producing suffering in other people because it is only responding to its own driving needs without regard to anyone else or anything else. You see it in the conflicts in the Mideast, you see it in the United States, you see it in Asia, you see it in Africa, South America, Europe, you see it everywhere. You see it in the Ukraine and Russia, you see it in China, and you see it everywhere. But if we really know that divine consciousness is giving to us. It's like, oh, I don't have to go get. It's being given. If we really know that divine consciousness is giving to us all the time, 24/7, 365 days a year, and 366 days a year during the leap years, we can relax. Oh, then it becomes, what happens next? We can appreciate that we are instruments of the divine for the distribution of these unending divine gifts. Oh, if I give energy like a farmer to the seeds that are planted, then I'm going to harvest, and my harvest not only serves me, my family, but it can serve many other people. Very few farmers are only farming and growing enough just for them as individuals. These farmers, in the day when it was a more balanced agricultural systems existed on planet Earth, these farming families were producing for many families. And in exchange, they were receiving other things of value. The divine is giving to us all the time, which says we need to stop taking long enough to receive, and then when we understand that we're receiving, and it's always available to us, this ego anxiety of, I gotta take, it's scarce, there's not enough, diminishes. And then we can rise to a higher level. In relationships, and we're in relationships with everything, with a computer, with people, with animals, with anything that we connect to, attentionally or physically. If we put our attention on something, we're in relationship. We're talking to something, we're in relationship. We're thinking about something, we're in relationship. What's important to understand, I think, for harmony, is when we're in relationship with people and even animals, we can pretty quickly determine their tendencies to take or their tendencies to give. Nobody has a dog that they love because that dog is 100% taker. That is not happening. Those dogs are so willing to give love and give affection and give attention that it makes it a joyful experience for us to give to those dogs. Like, oh yeah. Same is true for people who love cats or birds or fish or any number of things. when they give to those animals are producing some vibration in the field of that person who's doing the giving. Years ago, when we lived in Kansas City, Missouri, we overbuilt a house. We built a house and put in waterfalls and a koi pond. You go, oh, that's nice, that's nice. Real cool, really cool. And if had you told me 6 months or 6 weeks or 6 days before those fish went into that koi pond that you could fall in love with a fish, I'm like, that's crazy. Fall in love with a fish if you give me tartar sauce. Yeah. But, watching the consciousness of those fish in action, it was an unbelievable experience to me. It was unbelievable. I had an automatic fish feeder. And in the summertime, they eat more. Their metabolism is higher. So I had it set for a couple of times a day, like 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. And minutes before 8 and minutes before 4, these fish would go to the end of the pond where that machine was set up. The machine made no sounds prior to the appointed hour when it released the pellets into the water. How did fish know that it was nearing feeding time after only a few days of having that experience? I looked at the fish. I'm looking for wristwatches. Nope. None of them had wristwatches on. I saw no alarm clocks. Saw no signage. How did the consciousness of the fish quickly learn that feeding time was going to occur in just a few minutes at these two times a day? I'm like, I love these fish. They're amazing to me. And frankly, the end of our relationship in Kansas City, Missouri, came when somebody stole all the fish from the pond when we were away. They drained the pond, took the fish, refilled the pond, left the water running, and did what they did. I guess the fish were valuable to somebody who was a pure taker, who then sold them, I guess. Like, wow, wow. And in normal day-to-day life, unlike dogs who are very quick to love, if we get scammed by people, it's going to be because we were not aware that the person was committed to taking and that he was only pretending to be a giver. And we accepted this, oh, I'm doing it for you, this is a great thing, and I'm doing it for you. And we accepted that pretense. Notice the advertising that you encounter the next time on television or in print or on the internet or the next sales presentation that you are involved in. Are they really giving? Are they balancing your self-interest with their self-interest? Or are they taking? Is it all pretense? The more people insist on following their ego's drive to take, the more suffering they will experience. When we're committed to taking, we are not open and receiving and receptive to receiving divine gifts because we think what the ego is telling us, if you want it, you got to do it. If you want it, you have to take it. And if our I-ness, our identity, our individuality falls for that trick, that lower vibrational trick, that lower vibrational advice, we got suffering coming our way. Because we're going to reap what we sow. And if we sow is taking, guess what? It's going to be taken from us. Other people will be drawn to us to take from us. And when it's taken from people who are takers, they go, oh, wow, why me? They're going to have pain and suffering. And basically, because they don't understand or not willing to understand this idea of law of cause and effect, it's like, oh, it was, oh, why me? That was unfair. They're going to misinterpret how this was caused. Oh, I was a victim. No. There are no victims. There are only volunteers. And if it's taken from us, you go, let me think. I must have sown a seed of taking somewhere along the line. And then we can grow. We can experience remorse. We can heal. We can let go. We can forgive ourselves and others and elevate our consciousness toward that ultimate goal of Christ consciousness. And it is that idea that we can rise above the ego. And instead of listening to it, we can listen to this higher awareness that comes and it's available. It doesn't speak as loudly as the ego, though. It's like, oh, is that what they mean by that still small voice? I think so. It's like, and the ego? Yeah, that's a loud voice. And demanding and angry and bullying and raging and, yep, that's the one. That's the one. If we don't listen to that, but instead listen to that still small voice, that delivery system of awareness that's coming through our connection with divine consciousness, we're going to have a different experience. And that different experience we can see as the ego showing up as our servant of our higher awareness. We will have become its master. We would manage it, master it, and then, as Christ says, we will know happiness and joy beyond anything that we currently can imagine. That's the way we want ego showing up, not the way it is predominantly showing up today. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds, and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.